Well, NAILAC, first of all, is a national network of Latino and Caribbean communities organized throughout the U.S. We were founded in the year 2004, and here we are in Boston, Massachusetts, celebrating our seventh annual membership assembly. And we just concluded the event this afternoon. NAILAC, from the very beginning, was self-defined as a national network committed to advancing an advocacy strategy intended to help us contribute to better the quality of life of our communities in the U.S., as well as the communities in our countries of origin.
And one of the important things to highlight, too, is the fact that the member organizations of NAILAC are all immigrant-led organizations. And this is something that maybe people don't realize, but, you know, there's a lot of people out there in the immigrant rights field that aren't immigrant-led organizations. So this is very unique about NAILAC.
Indeed, we take pride at saying that, pride and sorrow at the same time, because, you know, we take pride in the sense that we are, so far, the only genuine immigrant-led Latino-Caribbean national network in the U.S. It is a matter of sorrow when you take into account that there are literally 20 plus million Latin American Caribbean immigrants in the U.S., mostly Mexicans. And for such a huge universe, we are of the opinion that there should be several more networks our type. But you are correct. While we applaud, you know, the work of the immigrant rights movement altogether, we believe that we still have a very significant challenge when it comes to how good a job the larger immigrant rights movement has done when it comes to truly empowering the very subject of what makes us work, which is, you know, migrant communities.
Now, you mentioned the fact that NAILAC has a very broad agenda that includes not just immigrants' rights, but includes economic development, includes trade, and all these things. And if we have more time, I'd love to talk about all those things. But I'm going to focus a little bit on the immigrants' rights aspect at the moment, because a lot's happened in the last few years. I mean, you guys were very involved in the 2006 marches, which were tremendous. They're the biggest explosion of a social movement we've seen in this country in decades. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I think, hoped out of that they would see some serious change in terms of immigration reform. Then again, in 2008, we had President Obama both in the election and after the election promising that immigrants' rights would be a major feature of his efforts, that he even made statements about, you know, the first year of his administration there would be changes. That hasn't happened. And so I think there's a lot of disappointment right now over what's happened the last few years. Where are things at, you think, in the struggle for immigrants' rights?
Well, we are in a very delicate moment because as much as it is an unbelievable statement to be made, we haven't yet seen the worst. I mean, we really believe in NAILAC that when you take the longer view of what's been happening in the U.S. over the last three decades, let alone the last, you know, couple of years, we have been in a process in which every year has brought up something worse, you know, than the previous year. And I don't just mean it in terms of immigrant rights, or the notion of what kind of immigration policy should the country enact. But I'm talking about the larger trends, you know, that we are seeing in the country. This particular configuration of the immigrant community that now resides in the U.S., which is predominantly Latin American, predominantly Caribbean, has happened at the very same time in which in the U.S., we have seen the worst process of redistribution of wealth and income. This has generated profound sense of insecurity, anxiety, fear in broad segments of what used to be called the middle class in the U.S. And in absence of clearly identified understandings of how is it that all these changes happen, the people who are affected become very ripe objects of manipulation by circles in the U.S., political circles, who are absolutely driven, you know, by a hate, fear, racial prejudice agenda. And that's exactly what we are seeing happening now. So we are very conscious, you know, that yes, you are correct. In the year 2006, we saw what could be easily argued as the broadest, fastest deployed mobilizations in the history of the U.S., but let's not confuse You know, the fact that there was this major outburst of energy in the form of the marches with the existence or the absence of an actual structured, well-organized immigrant rights movement. I think that what is really sad is when an incident, you know, like the marches in the spring of 2006 take place, and there are no organized structures to really bank, you know, on the benefits of such a mobilization. So contrary to some others, you know, we are of the opinion that the marches, as spectacular and as inspiring as they were, they happened, unfortunately, in a context where there were hardly prepared, organized, readily available, truly capable organizations to capitalize on that major mobilization. And the results are obvious. Obama could get away, you know, with offering what he did. And let's be honest. I mean, when Obama offered that he was going to deliver immigration policy reform in his first year in office, he really made that commitment before Latino, Latin American audiences. He didn't make this promise before Meet the Press. He didn't make this offer at the Democratic Party convention, you know, before every single delegate at the convention. He made this promise to Latino voters. And let's not kid ourselves. He was absolutely Obama the candidate, trying to get the most out of the Latino vote, and he did. He got 67% of the Latinos voting for him in 2008. So, you know, we are realistic. You know, we understand that probably Obama promised way more, not only to us, but to almost everybody, that he could possibly deliver. We believe that what's really at stake now is how will we, at the very least, manage to force the Obama administration to truly back down on the literal assault that they are conducting against our communities via the enforcement in a blind manner of a law that he has indeed called, you know, a dysfunctional, a wasteful, an inhumane immigration policy, which is what we really have in place now.
Yeah, I'm glad you point that out. You know, it's not just the frustration over the fact that there wasn't immigration reform, but the frustration over the fact that actually enforcement of our broken immigration system is increased during the Obama administration. So that's really frustrating. You know, one question I raise when I'm talking to organized labor all the time these days is I've been very critical of the fact that I think organized labor, as they often do, after the elections in 2008, took a break, right? And rather than put the pressure on the new administration to actually push forward their agenda, they basically always take that attitude of, well, we'll just let him do what he needs to do now. Do you feel like the immigrants' rights movement kind of did the same thing, where maybe they didn't put the pressure that needed to be placed on the administration right from the get-go? Or?
Absolutely. No question about it. I think that we took a turn in a direction that hasn't really served us well back in 2002. Let's just for a minute bring back an element of context that I always think is important for people to understand. In 1996, we went through a process of realignment of very important pieces of public law in the U.S., including immigration, that really signified the worst turn, you know, to a far more exclusive, restrictive, punishing environment in terms of immigration law, with the passage in September of 1996 of the so-called Illegal Immigration and Immigrant Responsibility Act, known in short as IRA-IRA. For 5 years, many groups, including many of the organizations that are now part of NALAC, we fought back, you know, against that piece of law in the context of what could broadly be called the Fix 96 campaign. The truth of the matter is we failed miserably. You know, we did not manage to turn anything back that was truly important in the context of IRA-IRA. So by 2002, a group of organizations, mainly based in D.C., not exclusively, but mainly based in Washington, D.C., came to the conclusion that the new normal was to accept IRA-IRA as part of the new landscape. You know, that there was no point in trying to really fight back against it, that instead we had to conceive immigration policy reform within the framework of punishment, within the framework of demonizing immigrant communities, within the framework of simply accepting, you know, that there was no way to turn that back. And that strategy I'm referring to, it's what's been known as comprehensive immigration reform. From 2002 to the present, we have seen a constant systematic backing down, a constant systematic lowering of the standards to the point, you know, that we now, and I mean we are in a very broad collective manner, obviously the main responsibility falls in the shoulders of the organizations that have been driving this strategy known as comprehensive immigration reform. We have given even the Democratic Party pretty much a blank check. You know, when Obama gets elected, what do? The message gets around that we should not be too forceful on Obama, that we shouldn't demand too much, that he's a friend, that he's going to do the right thing. And everybody is essentially putting what I call as, you know, very soft gloves, you know, to deal with the Obama administration. You know, when we actually met with the transition team, and I mean NALAC in this case, met with the transition team in January of 2009, we were very clear with them, you know, that the very first thing they needed to do was to back down in terms of this crazy immigration policy enforcement drive in which the Bush administration had been at already. We are very concrete in saying eliminate, you know, the any more agreements, 287G agreements. Forget about collaboration between local police, state police, and immigration police, federally speaking. We were very concrete in saying do not go after anybody whose only violation to the law is being present in the U.S. without status. You know, talking about criminals, you know, really hardcore criminals is a different story, but there are hardly any of those, you know, within the Latino immigrant community, for example. We also said, make sure that you begin to process at truly rational speeds every single immigration benefits application. None of that has happened, you know, and none of the allies in D.C. really supported us, you know, in that particular call. Of course we wanted, you know, a brand new immigration policy, but we were very clear that that was likely not to happen simply because the economic crisis, by the time Obama took the presidency, the time he became the inhabitant of the White House, the economic crisis was already far advanced. We had already lost over 3 million jobs, you know, by the time that he took office. And it's only gotten worse, you know, since then. So it is very obvious to us that, yes, we were way too soft, you know, in the Obama administration. And I think that what this tells us, because this is a symptom, the real problem is that the so-called immigrant right movements have become too cozy, I would even argue, perhaps under the wings of the National Democratic Committee. And so we have confused allegiances. The question is, who are we advocating for? Are we advocating, you know, for more Democrats to be elected, very often blue dog Democrats, or are we advocating for communities? And to the extent that the Democratic Party can have any role in subordinating the immigrant rights movement, we're not going to get anywhere.
So in light of the recent elections, which obviously make things even tougher, where do you think the movement's going at this point? What's on the agenda for the movement broadly? And also then for NALAC, you know, obviously that was a big part of the discussion here at the meetings this weekend, is what you guys are going to do going forward.
I believe that there are, for an organization like ours, for a network like NALAC, there are two formidable challenges. The first one is how do we feed our member organizations with the knowledge, with the inspiration, with the tools that can enable them to truly exercise what it means to be empowered, you know, to really strengthen as much as we can the self-confidence of our communities, the conviction, you know, that we are on the right moral side of this issue, and to make sure that every single immigrant leader can proudly say, yes, I am an immigrant, and here is, you know, my humanity, and here is how I contribute, you know, to the well-being of the U.S. That's the first formidable challenge. The second challenge next to it is how do we, using that empowerment trend, can then reach out, you know, in a more organized manner to multiple sectors in U.S. society, not so much with you know, a broad array of studies, you know, to show in a statistical sense and how good immigrants are for America, because people are tired of that. What we really need to do is be able to generate as many Latino Caribbean immigrant leaders to be able to engage in a meaningful, emotional, person-to-person kind of engagement as many Americans as possible, and to do it in an organized manner. You know, do it through churches, do it through communities of faith, do it through labor unions, you know, do it through every single venue that we can possibly identify. Universities, schools, I mean, are very important institutions in our society where we need to be far more present, challenging the very emotional perception that exists about us. We are absolutely convinced that for as long as the dominant perception remains one in which we are seen as a threat, you know, as some sort of problem, as some sort of charge in our society, there will be no political willingness, you know, to do anything meaningful to change the way immigrants are treated in our, you know, communities, nor the way we organize our immigration laws.
You know, in 2008, when the economic crisis was really becoming apparent, and you know, even the mainstream media was saying the economic system that we've been living under is in crisis and needs to change, I was actually quite hopeful that maybe we'd see some serious change develop, and that's not, unfortunately, what we've seen. But I do wonder still, you point out the fact that, you know, there's these various crises going on within our society right now. I know you, Bill Fletcher, here, they are talking about the various crises that are affecting the nation and the world. And you've talked about how that's made it more difficult right now, unfortunately, to push for immigrants' rights. But is there a possibility here, too, of like what you're saying, which is these various communities coming together and something new emerging?
Well, it is indeed counterintuitive, paradoxical almost. You know, the best classical time for communities to reinvent, you know, the way we do our business from a community point of view, from the interest of ordinary people, not the interest of multi-billionaires, you know, in our society, is precisely in times of crisis. The challenge, I think, in the U.S. more than perhaps anywhere else, is the fact that we are a very clueless, you know, society altogether, and I include immigrants in this respect, when it comes to truly understanding where is it that the policies that have brought us to where we are today originated. You know, we often fail to actually pinpoint how decisions that were made as early as 1981 have come back to haunt us, you know, in the long haul. And for example, you know, the reason why so many states are literally broke, you know, some of them in the very verge of bankruptcy, is simply because, you know, we went completely nuts, you know, in terms of tax policy in the country. And right now, you know, the forces that have benefit, you know, from this have also successfully managed to make every single America, even so those of us who consider ourselves progressive, think that taxes are evil, you know. And the truth is, that's a major example of PR success. So we need to really challenge, you know, a lot of the common wisdom that is out there and begin to really think rationally about problem solving in terms of larger public policies. And there is no question about the fact that the financing of a people's agenda is not going to come from private corporations. You know, it's going to come from a functioning government, and a functioning government needs to be properly fed. The problem is not paying taxes. The problem is, what are they doing with our taxes? Whom of us, I mean, is actually talking about what happens in terms of national security and defense budget, and what are we really getting out of our money? I mean, there is hardly debate, you know, about these issues. And those are areas that we really need to begin to tackle in a more effective manner. And again, I believe that immigrant communities, because of the severity of the oppression we are being submitted to over the last several, you know, decades, but more clearly over the last few years, and as you well said, I mean, with the electoral results of less than, you know, 10 days ago, clearly we have more to worry about, because there are some really nuts, I mean, some really crazy people coming into positions of leadership in the House of Representatives. And, you know, with the reduced advantage of Democrats in the Senate, there will be even more willingness on the part of the Democrats, I mean, to fold out to whatever the Republicans want them to do. They've been doing that, I mean, for the last couple of years. To me, it's laughable when I hear President Obama saying, we're going to have to compromise. What have they been doing the last couple of years by compromising? And so I think it's important to really understand that now more than ever, we immigrants, who are inevitably bound, you know, to be an ever more significant factor, you know, in our society at large, yes, we need to think about an immigrant rights agenda, but next to it, we need to think about a society-wide agenda that ultimately results in people increasing their level of happiness, people increasing their level of full realization of their basic expectation, and able, therefore, to realize that we are in this boat together, no matter what.
I love that, leaving on that note, and I wish we had more time to talk about what that means, too, but we'll do that, have to do that in our time. But thank you, Oscar. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.